You're listening to Supply Chain Briefs. Real companies, real challenges, and real solutions.
Welcome to Supply Chain Briefs, the podcast that discusses the challenges, innovations, and critical issues of today's global supply chains. I'm your host, Joseph Moretta, and thank you for joining us. On today's episode, we have Ernesto Levy, CEO of Radiance Living, as a manufacturing and home personal care consumer products company, to discuss the following supply chain crisis and how he took a company from pre-pandemic crisis to post-pandemic profitability. His career spans more than 20 years at Procter & Gamble and Novartis, both in the United States and Latin America, leading iconic brands such as Crest, Pantene, Cascade, and Excedrin. So without further ado, please help me welcome Ernesto. Welcome, Ernesto.
Thank you, Joe. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So really just want to dive into the conversation here. I know that in having the conversations with you, you had shared some of the challenges that you had at Radiance Living. Coming from the pandemic and then, you know, kind of transitioning into that post-pandemic world. And there was kind of a little bit of a challenge there for the company. And I was hoping you could just tell us a little bit about what it was that you guys did. I know that you guys focused on the supply chain. How did you turn things around? What was that like for you guys? I was hoping you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for the opportunity to speak to your audience. And you know, if there's one message that I would want your listeners to take away is that in my experience, supply chain leaders can often be reactive, right? And join the conversation in a company when there is a specific need, right? We need to manufacture this product or there is a, you know, a shortage of something that we need help with. But I would submit to you that supply chain leaders should have and request a seat at the table, at the strategic table, because the impact they can have on all the operational aspects and all the P&L aspects of a company are really, really critical. And particularly for a company like Radiance Living, we are a manufacturing company. We make consumer goods for either a brand or for a retailer. So they are putting their trust in us, and our job is to make products reliably, with quality and cost effectively. Supply chain needs to be at the center. And you'll see that a big part of what helped us turn around the company was the fact that we did exactly that. We said, you know, supply chain, you need to be at the center. You need to be part of our turnaround.
Wow. Yeah, I can definitely see how that is going to be one of the key takeaways from this conversation. And I hope that our listeners are really paying attention to this. So, you know, given that, you know, you think that supply chain leaders need to be at the, you know, have a seat at the table. What is the impact that, what are some ways that the supply chain can impact that turnaround?
Yeah, let me start with the most fundamental one that we were going through. So as you were mentioning in your intro, we make, you know, consumer goods, and the pandemic, as for many companies, was both good, very good, and also very bad. So we manufactured disinfecting wipes. So obviously during the pandemic, I mean, we did not stop producing and we couldn't, you know, keep up with the demand. But when the pandemic ended and the demand subsided, the company found itself with a lot of inventory, a lot of unused capacity. And if you recall what happened, you know, we had supply chain challenges, we had inflation, we had labor shortages, and all those things, you know, came together to put the company in a financial crisis, which was exactly the point when I took over as CEO. And we had to turn things around. And the biggest challenge we had at that moment was cash. We didn't have enough cash, and our inventories had ballooned. In some products, we had, 120 days worth of inventory, but ironically, our service was terrible. So we needed to do something. We knew that our priority was getting cash and that the most effective way to free up cash was to lower our inventories. And that's where I invited the supply chain leaders to participate in what we were going to do. But I will tell you something, that cutting inventory is easy, right? You know, you just have to stop buying and consume it. Reducing inventory and not affecting service to your customer, that's what's hard, right? And that was the challenge that I gave to our supply chain leader, is we need to reduce our inventories and free up cash, but we cannot do it at the expense of our customers, because we already had a backlog of orders and our customers were getting frustrated. So yeah, we would free up cash, but if we upset our customers, then we would be in a similar, if not worse, situation. So good supply chain leaders can do both, right? They can, affect the cash and the profitability, but they can do it while enhancing our service. And that was exactly what we tasked, at least the first task that we asked our leaders to take on.
So yeah, you kind of described like the perfect storm for supply chain professionals. You have all this inventory on hand, you want to move it, but if you move it too quickly, you're going to affect your service levels to your customers. And you constantly want to make sure that you're servicing your customers at the rate that they anticipate. Because if once they feel like they're being pushed aside, they will go to the competitor. They will go somewhere else. So that's a very important aspect to turning how you can turn your company around, utilizing your supply chain, utilizing your supply chain strategies, and inviting supply chain to have a seat at the table, as you said earlier. So one of the ways that I, in our pre-discussion with this, was I felt, in talking to you, that there needed to be a part of the equation. It wasn't just, reducing inventory. It wasn't just, making sure that your customers were happy. But internally, you guys needed to make a shift. There needed to be a change in the culture that the company was operating on. And that was an interesting aspect to me. So I was hoping you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Crises offer a fantastic opportunity for companies to change, to do things differently. When I assumed the role of CEO, I deployed, the first thing we did is we deployed a mission, right? And our mission was customer partnerships for life, right? Because that is the core of what we do. If we don't have customers, we don't have a business. And that mission had four pillars. The first one was people. Second was world-class supply organization. The third was data. And the last one was growth. But you notice that I put people, first. It all starts and ends with the organization. And as we were getting started, the reason why supply chain was so critical, if you think of organizations, obviously you have different functions, but there's certain functions that have the ability, by the nature of what they do, to touch every function, both internally and externally. And I'll give you the example of the inventory problem and how we solved it. I could tell you all the supply chain buzzwords and the things that we did to address the inventory, but probably the most important thing that we did is that we accomplished the inventory reduction via a weekly meeting of cross-functional team, sales, R&D, procurement, quality, planning, everybody together, led by supply chain. Our supply chain leader had, the ability, right, to interact and understand and convey the needs to the manufacturing floor, to the planning, to the sourcing team, but also had the ability to connect with the sales and the customers, right, to outline, you know, understand what they needed and communicate how we were going to serve them, right? So that, you know, hub and spoke, right? That was the critical, you know, element that allowed us to be successful with the inventory reduction without affecting or actually enhancing our customer service. And I, in my opinion, right, the supply chain organization and leaders are in a unique position. Why? Because they can see the entirety of the operation. If I put sales at the center, they're going to have the mindset of, I want to serve my customer no matter what. And if I put, you know, the manufacturing guys, right, they're going to want to produce one product all the time and keep things simple, right? And those, so those sets of needs have to meet. And that's where the supply chain leaders come in and play a key role. And, you know, when we deployed our people kind of principles, they were built on teamwork, leadership, and personal accountability. And this idea of teamwork and having everyone together every week, going through a very data-based approach, understanding both sides, and having the supply chain leader, you know, play a not only a subject matter expert role, but also a moderator role, right? I mean, because at the end of the day, that is what you're doing, right? You're having a lot of different priorities pulling, you know, the needs, and somebody has to kind of coalesce them and reach some sort of, you know, agreement that will deliver the best for the company. And that is at the same time something very important to deliver the cash needs that we had, but also an important culture builder, right? Because what's happening there, you having all the functions in the same forum, reaching compromises, expressing their, you know, unique needs and motivations, and then finding a solution that works for the company. So what happened after we brought down our inventory from roughly 120 days, this was in October, November, and within 4 months, we were at, you know, 45 days, which for our business is best in class. And it was a win, right? We enhanced service at the same time. So what you have is a joint experience that all the functions go through of a success, of a win. And what that does is it has a snowball effect, right? The team now knows that, hey, if we work together, sometimes we compromise on, you know, what my particular need is. We were able to achieve something where, you know, the customer won, the operation won, and the overall company won. And that, you know, you can't put a price on what that does for the culture of the organization. And again, it was enabled by, you know, a function that has the ability to see and touch all the different areas of the company.
Amazing, amazing. Really good stuff. And one of the things I think, you know, in talking to you and in preparing for this call, I know that technology was a big influence into bringing those different facets of the teams together. So I was wondering if you could speak to what technologies did you implement? Did you get rid of some technologies? Was it an ERP, an MRP? Were you utilizing any of those systems in your exploration and in your success?
You know, Joe, I had a mentor once that, you know, he would always say, look, in the absence of data, the highest paid opinion on the room wins, right? So, and I've taken that to heart throughout my career. So I am very data driven, and we can sit down in a meeting with, you know, anyone from an entry level person to the CEO. And if you have the right data to support, you know, the recommendation or your opinion, that's what's going to win. If you don't have data, then it becomes an opinion game. And usually the most senior person, you know, is going to win that. And so, as I mentioned earlier, the four pillars, people, world-class supply organization, data, and growth. Data was incredibly important to me. And we made from day one a significant investment in data infrastructure. So some of the specific things that we did is we did immediately, as soon as we started, moved to a new modern ERP system. So an integrated demand, supply, procurement. That was an investment, right? Not only in financial, but also, yeah. I mean, if you've done an SAP transformation, right? There's a lot of work that goes, but we needed that. And that was an enabler of us being able to have the right data to be able to forecast, plan, order materials, and then plan our production. So we made that that investment, and that was really important. But we also invested internally in tools to enhance our data and reporting. So Power BI, which is an overlay you can put on all your data systems to create reports, was an investment that we made. We trained an organization, and now we have over 120 different reports. So when we sit down in a meeting, in these meetings that I was describing to you, there was data, right? There was a list of items that we had too much inventory on, days of supply. All this data was very much available. Another big investment that we made, and some of your listeners might be familiar with the Vorn system that you can put on our manufacturing lines to get real-time data on production and then on downtime reasons. Which, you know, ended up being one of the reasons why our service was poor, our inventory was too high, our machines were down too much, but we didn't know why. So now we started gathering data. And once you have data, within 3 months, we could Pareto, there's always an 80-20, right? What are the top reasons why the line is down? And then you systematically tackle, those reasons. And so we gradually started using data to create a culture of continuous improvement. So what you call technology, I combine technology is good when it gives you tools and it facilitates the ability to create a culture of continuous improvement. And that's what we've started to build, right? A culture where it's not, who is the most senior person in the room or, who has the most authority, but or who speaks the loudest, which often happens. But let's make this very data-based and have that drive our decisions. And then importantly, empower the organization with the data so they can make decisions, right? It's not an inspection tool, right? It's not me getting a report saying, oh, this group is not doing their job or this line is not doing well. We put TVs we have screens in every line in every one of our suites that, list out kind of what their status is, what their goals are, what their, production is versus target. And then allow them to know, are they on track or not? And then they can correct, right? So it's making that data available to the organization so they can become a continuous improvement organization.
Yeah, I think it's so important that oftentimes, companies, they can identify the issue or they can identify that they have an issue, but yet they can't identify what that issue is. And until you have the data, I always refer back to, do you want to be a thermometer or a thermostat? A thermometer can only yell and scream that, hey, it's hot outside. It's really hot outside. A thermostat can tell you, yeah, it's hot outside, but I can do something about it. And it sounds to me like your company went from the thermometer stage of, hey, there's a problem. We know there's a problem, but we can't really do anything about the problem. And then when you introduce this whole data aspect and collecting the data and looking at it, you were able then to have the mechanism to make that shift, to make the necessary changes in the necessary departments, because now, pulling the whole story together, you had everybody in one spot sitting at the table to discuss what the issues were. And then you were able to then say, these are the issues at hand. We need a solution to address these issues so that all of us, not just one of us, can get some relief here and start seeing some answers and some results. Which I think is the right mindset if you're going to take your company through this kind of a transformation.
That's a great analogy. I'm going to use that in the future. I will say that it's a process, right? Because what happens is when you have customers yelling or the line is down, then there's always this bias for action, right? You got to do something and do something now. And data takes time, right? You know,
yeah.
You have to get a few months of it's an investment to get the tools, to start collecting, to make sure that the metrics are the right metrics. So you have to believe in it and you have to have some patience, which, you know, it's not always easy for us as leaders to have. So you have to have champions of the tools and of the data. And it took us probably a good, you know, three, four, five months with each of these tools to really start seeing the results, right? Because there's always growing pains and sometimes it's even, things get a little bit worse, right? When you're starting, you're just learning to use data right. Before they get better. So you have to believe it, but it works, right? And if you don't have the data, then you're just operating blind or on gut.
And to that point, you know, I've heard, you know, companies say that, you know, the old adage of you know, being a firefighter, where you're constantly putting out fires and you run to the next fire, and then when that fire is out, then another fire is already somehow started up, so you run over there, and by that point you're behind the eight ball constantly.
All the time.
You're always going to be chasing that and being reactive rather than being proactive. And when you take that step back, which sounds counterintuitive, like, hey, before we do anything, let's stop, not put the fires out. Let's understand what areas of the business that we need to tackle so that we can make the best decision. You know, to your point, you said earlier, the 80-20 rule. You know, you can go out and put fires out all over, but are those the fires that are going to be providing the greatest result for the company at large? You want to attack the biggest things, and I think that's what you guys kind of did in your evaluation. You said, hey, what do we need to do as a team? Because, again, it can't be a siloed approach. It can't be this department goes and tackles this over here, this department goes and tackles this. You need to come together and figure out exactly what the company's needs are so that you can make the best decisions as a leader and then as a team. Come together. And I'm going to use one of my corny adages again. Think of, you know, back in school when you had the tug of war and you have all the kids pulling on the rope, and if they're all pulling in different directions, guess what? You're not going to get very far. But the minute that you guys decide to come together and pull in unison on and in time and in the same direction, that's when you start to see the results. That's when you start to build that momentum. And once you start building that momentum, the game's over then. Yeah. The game's over.
I like all your adages, actually. But, you know, me give you like the perfect example that brings all that together on how data, metrics, and then everybody working together can have a huge impact. So we manufacture, one of the key products we make is the pods that you use for either your laundry or your automatic dishwasher. And we make, you know, over a billion pods a year, right? So you're making a lot of these. And we, for a number of reasons, coalesced against this metric of pods per labor dollar, right? So how many pods are we producing for every hour of labor that we're investing in that production, right? And you can imagine you need a lot of different pieces of data to get that metric, but we started reporting that metric every day, every shift, for every line, for every product, right? And the whole company, right? And people knew the target. It's reported on the TV sets every hour, right? So this was the metric that we coalesced, and we said, look, we're here at this level and we need to get to this level. When you think of the power of that metric, that pods per labor dollar touches on every team that we have, every function. Mm-hmm. So it made the people working on the lines think about, how do I produce more pods, right? How do I speed up the machines or how do I have the machine uptime be higher, right? So that's their piece of the puzzle to improve pods per labor dollar was, hey, machine uptime and machine speed. But, you know, for HR, right, they also had a role in terms of, you know, the type of labor and how many people we had on the line, what they were doing, how the tasks were organized. There, you know, for the planning folks, they had to make sure that we had the right materials there in time, because that was causing, you know, them not to be able to run. You know, the people that were managing the maintenance team, we were having a lot of leakers and scrap. So suddenly every function had a contribution to the same metric, and we were rewarding and we were measuring everyone on pods per labor dollar. So that metric became one that everybody was rallying around, and everybody felt like, hey, I'm going to do my part to make this number improve and I'm going to win, right? Which is very different than when you have maybe a, I don't know, like a sales metric that only the salespeople are driven by, but maybe it affects somebody else. So that's the power of getting metrics, but then ensuring that everybody in the organization and different functions have a way to influence them. It's very powerful. And you see the, just like we did in the inventory example, here you had everyone, you know, coalescing, working towards the same goal.
Amazing. Amazing. And you know, it really does fascinate me as a supply chain professional, because supply chain does really touch every area of the business. And I don't mean that to be selfish in the sense that, you know, just because that's what I do, I think that's important. It touches every area, but it also requires every area to be responsive to what you're doing and to make sure that every area of the business is aligned. So Ernesto, I really want to thank you for taking the time to join the podcast, to share your experience. I think the listeners are going to have a lot to grab from this. And I really just want to thank you for your time and thank you for the insight of what your experience and what the journey was. And I just want to ask you, is there any closing remarks that you have for the listeners?
I'll close back, you know, where I started. So when I took on the position of CEO, the company was in a crisis. Fast forward a year and a half, and we are growing, we're profitable, we have, you know, cash in the bank, you know, we have the normal challenges that any company does. And I often find that, you know, the supply chain leaders are too shy at, you know, putting themselves out there and offering up the impact they can have both on the business and the culture. There are processes that are already in place, like S&OP, that naturally put, you know, supply chain at the center. And I would just challenge people to think about that in a broader sense and say, hey, if I can be at the center in this specific process, why can't I be at the center in the leadership team of the company, in the strategy setting, you know, process of the company? Because more often than not, the impact that a supply chain leader can have is much, much greater than what I think often they believe they can do. So I would, you know, challenge them and encourage them to lean in and really kind of capitalize on the value that they can add.
Amazing, amazing advice. Ernesto, really want to thank you for taking the time today. This has been a great conversation. I think the listeners are really going to gain a lot from this. For anybody listening, our podcasts are published on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and more. Ernesto, thank you again for taking the time to be here on Supply Chain Briefs. And I'm sure we're going to get you a link, and maybe you even want to post this episode to post a link
LinkedIn
to your page.
Absolutely.
So folks, be sure to check out their company, check out what they're doing, Radiance Living. They really did transform the company via optimizing their supply chain. And Ernesto, once again, thank you so much for your time.
A pleasure.
This has been an episode of Supply Chain Briefs, which can be downloaded on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you get your podcasts from. Real companies, real challenges, and real solutions.